To fellow members of the DePauw family, alumni, faculty, and friends, greetings from the great class of 1984. It is a humbling honor to be selected to deliver greetings from the 25th reunion class. I am proud of my alma mater and delighted to be back on campus with my classmates to reflect on such a meaningful, magical, significant time in our lives that had such a deep impact on all of us and is still such a strong influence many years later. It's not as though one has a choice in the matter, though, for when asked by the new president of the university to deliver this address at his very first official alumni weekend, President Casey, please pardon our awkwardness in addressing you this weekend, as this is the first time in our lives that our university president is younger than us. From the class of 1984, allow us to welcome you to our DePauw family with our sincere wish for much success and long service in the faithful toil on behalf of our alma mater. We have commended to you a strong, relevant, and necessary institution that means a great deal to us, which we expect to be preserved and elevated under your watch. We look forward to great things from you for DePauw, and when called upon, I trust you will see our class rise to the occasion. And when the mantle of leading our great institution becomes heavy, I commend to you the charge of Henry V in the history play of the same title by Shakespeare, then imitate the action of the tiger, stiffen the sinews, summon up the blood, disguise fair nature with hard-favored rage. It is also an honor to be present for this special weekend with the distinguished and accomplished class of 1959. From our earliest days on the DePauw campus, we were mindful of your leadership and accomplishments. With classmates whom I have had the pleasure to know, such as Gay Burkhart, Tom Heshen, Andy Payne, Charles Watson, and Bob Wessling, you have for a generation represented and uplifted DePauw with your long and distinguished service. You embody the words of the author Chaim Potok in his novel, The Chosen. A span of life is nothing, but the man who lives that span, he is something. And then there is Dr. Joe Allen. I will probably recall for the remainder of my days the inspiration and pride we all felt that cold Veterans Day morning in 1982 when you lifted off from Cape Canaveral on the first fully operational flight mission of the space shuttle system aboard Columbia. The Indianapolis Star captured in a photo our fraternity living room packed with awestruck undergraduates cheering your ascent to the stars. It reminded me of that great anthem that our generation so enjoys, Blinded by the Light by Manfred Mann. Mama always told me not to stare into the eyes of the sun, but Mama, that's where the fun is. You, your father Perk, brother David, and your children all for decades have served DePauw in so many roles, and our school and we have been enriched by it. We salute you and the class of 1959. As I reflect back on what is memorable or noteworthy about our 25 years since leaving DePauw on that sunny, warm day, May 19, 1984, it strikes me that today we are celebrating such a brief period of time, a mere 4 years in an expected 80-year voyage on this planet. Why is it still so significant, and what made it so? Well, ours was the largest freshman class ever to have entered DePauw, 768 strong, when we arrived in August 1980. When busting at the seams with a record-sized class at the then most expensive college in Indiana, when the economy was so challenged, three TV stations from Indianapolis visited campus to investigate what was going on in Greencastle. More than a few of us wondered the same thing, especially how long sleeping arrangements on cots in Bowman Gym and in doubles, triples, and quads made out of singles and doubles in the dorms would last, and where we would ultimately live for 4 years. We arrived in Greencastle as leaders from our own smaller spheres, predominantly from suburbs and small cities all over the Midwest, strong, determined, and believing that we could find a place and a purpose at DePauw, and anticipating a bright future in the world community after. But we didn't really know what that future was, where this experience would lead us, nor how far our boundaries would expand. So it's fair to refer to our class as the bookends class, entering DePauw buffeted by significant world events and emerging 4 years later forever influenced by forces and events larger than us. Culturally, disco had died an ignominious death in White Sox Stadium on disco demolition night the summer of 1979, and rap and heavy metal had not yet been heard from, thankfully. We were imbued during our 4 years with what is still classically referred to as 80s music. Billy Joel, The Clash, Johnny Cougar, U2, Michael Jackson, Pink Floyd, The Police, Prince, The Cars, Talking Heads, you know what I mean. We'll hear more of that at tonight's dinner. And Bruce Springsteen's great album, Born in the USA, was released only 2 weeks after our graduation. So it was natural to believe that it was partly in our honor. But with John Lennon's tragic early death our freshman year, and the same for Marvin Gaye in the spring of our senior year, we learned not to take for granted the music that we treasured that carried our voice. Politically, our class was shaped by the country's bicentennial in 1976 with hope, but by the time we were making college decisions in 1979, the Soviets had invaded Afghanistan, 52 of our fellow Americans began serving 444 days of tortured and humiliating detention in Iran, and the Panama Canal had been voted out of the American pool of proud national assets. With President Reagan's Evil Empire speech to the British Parliament in 1982, charging that freedom and democracy will leave Marxism and Leninism on the ash heap of history, and Vietnam invading Cambodia, the Cold War seemed chillier than it had in decades. And by our senior year, the downing of a civilian Korean jetliner over the Sea of Japan by Soviet fighters with an American congressman on board, and the introduction of Star Wars in Congress seemed sure to keep superpower relations tense. Even in the previously untouchable realm of global amateur athletics, the United States boycotted the 1980 Moscow Summer Olympics, and 4 years later, 11 days prior to our graduation, the Soviets boycotted the Los Angeles Summer Olympics. The Pope, Anwar Sadat, Indira Gandhi, and President Reagan all suffered assassination attempts in our years at DePauw. Sadly, two of them successful. Some of us voted in and worked on our first presidential or national elections in the fall of 1980, when Ronald Reagan swept Jimmy Carter. 4 years later, we witnessed the campaign for Morning in America, when President Reagan ran for and won re-election, although the dawn promised was not yet clearly visible. Economically, the country was financially in collapse in 1979 and 1980, with inflation rising to 14% and the prime rate at 21%. The American population was fleeing our part of the country, the Rust Belt, in record numbers, to places like Texas and Georgia, Florida and California. Debates about bailing out Chrysler dominated the headlines. Sound familiar? Despite a new direction and new initiatives by the Republican administration, the unemployment rate was near 10% at our graduation 4 years later, right when we began job hunting. Then there are the bookends of a changing DePauw from our start to our matriculation. As the largest class ever to have entered DePauw, naturally there were enough extra students to allow for experimentation in the curriculum, and we witnessed the Q and S requirements for graduation. For the better, semester internships for the new Management Fellows program were begun. We still only had one or two phones in most fraternity and sorority houses, and on a given dorm floor, the only computers anywhere on campus were housed deep within a cooled, sterile room in the Science and Math Center, and the freewheeling 70s were still the predominant theme for a wide-open campus social atmosphere. East College was just a scaffold-clad old building, and Bowman Gym still had the swamp in the basement in which to swim or take a steam. Most importantly and sadly, we had lost four straight Monon Bell games to the uncouth and depraved cavemen up the road 30 miles in Crawfordsville. Well, despite the new alphabet soup curriculum, a majority of our class steered through them and graduated. As we were leaving, you could actually order your own individual phone to be added to your dorm room for a small additional charge. We had found the computer room in the Science and Math Center and maybe used it a couple of times, but we were looking forward to work or graduate school where computers would be readily available on a daily basis. WGRE had just gone stereo after 35 years broadcasting in mono. The freewheeling rush and social scene was about to undergo radical restructuring and restrictions, such as deferred rush and registered and carded keg parties. Bowman Park had replaced Bowman Gym. East College was resplendent in its restored state, and we sat under her shadow at graduation. And the Lilly Physical Education Center had opened in time for us to enjoy it our junior and senior years. And our class had reversed the Monon Bell slide with two wins, one incredible tie, and only one loss during our tenure. What transpired in between as a result of these bookends, we experienced 4 years of intense change and transformation into adults and citizens of the world. We reached beyond our boundaries and what we knew and what we thought we could become when arriving at DePauw. Through hard work, intense study, constant interpersonal exchanges, and only occasional social excesses, we questioned, doubted, explored, stretched, and amended our morality, our physicality, sexuality, spirituality, and certainly our normality. To a degree that we were much different upon leaving DePauw than when entering, I suggest to you for the better and ready to make our grand entrance onto the world stage. It's important to recognize and offer our gratitude to the faculty for the significant role that they played in our transformative experience. Our faculty was not the visible, researching, and publishing kind, but was wholly invested in teaching students. They shared our DePauw experience in all places where we lived, in the classroom, on the road abroad, in our living units, and in debates about the direction and the future of DePauw. They encouraged, challenged, and taught us, fully committed to the goal of preparing us for an uncertain future. So many of our professors were instrumental in inspiring us to continue exploration beyond the written text in lifelong learning after DePauw's classroom. I can recount the instances of inspiration by one of my professors in a number of experiences I had after DePauw, which germinated in the classroom or with a discussion or a book, in visiting W.B. Yeats' gravesite in County Sligo, Ireland, listening to Handel's Messiah in St. Paul's Cathedral on Thanksgiving, viewing William Blake's art at the Tate Gallery on the South Bank, attending Midnight Mass at Notre Dame on Christmas Eve, visiting Lenin's tomb in Moscow's Red Square, viewing the great masters of art at the Hermitage in St. Petersburg, seeing Max von Sydow in The Tempest at the Old Vic, touring Hamlet's home in Elsinore Castle in Copenhagen, and cresting the crater rim at sunrise on Mount Kilimanjaro. I could recollect a spark from a professor that ignited the imagination and left an impression to be more fully formed later. It is just as Bernard Malamud wrote in The Natural, "We have two lives, Roy, the life we learn with and the life we live with after that." I have had the good fortune of being able to express my appreciation to DePauw on high peaks all over the world. This public symbolism is similar to the many subtle ways that my classmates celebrate and superbly represent DePauw in their everyday lives, in their homes, at work, in places of worship, and in their communities. My mantra at the advent of turning 40 several years ago, still misunderstood by many, including my spouse, has been from that great Stoic Roman, Marcus Aurelius. It is not death that a man should fear, but he should fear never beginning to live. Not settling for the ordinary, I've unfurled my DePauw banner atop the tallest peaks of three continents, Africa, Europe, and North America, and on a handful of other worthy peaks in South America, France, and the American West, as a show of thanks to a university that was true to its classic liberal arts mission of instilling in us a sense of exploration of what it means to be a human being, of having a life worth living. As there remain other physical peaks to inspire me over the next 25 years, for all of us there remain accomplishments to be realized, goals to fulfill, and intellectual and societal peaks to master. Our alma mater has prepared us well, and we have the time and resources yet to expend in our quest. Class of 1984, our time is not yet over. Our stories are not yet fully written. Our legacy is not cemented, and our symbols are not yet completely drawn. We are in a position to finish strong and contribute our own individual and collective stories to DePauw's history. I trust that you will do so masterfully as you have these first 25 years. As wrote Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, lives of great men remind us we can make our lives sublime, and departing, leave behind us footprints on the sands of time. Here's to you, old DePauw.